Trusty Radio Shack stopwatch is counting, and that means all is well. And we want to say hi, welcome to Blind Like Me, and welcome to Nancy Lynn. You never did give me a last name.
Well, my last name is Lynn, but like I tell people, I'm still looking for somebody to give me a last name.
Oh, but your last name is Lynn.
My last name is Lynn.
Well, all right, we'll go with that. Nancy Lynn. I thought that was probably a middle name that you were using or something. But anyway, welcome to Blind Like Me, and you're in St. Louis.
That's correct.
I was just telling her I was born in St. Louis on Belt Avenue. In St. Louis, 64 years ago, actually 64 and a half years ago now, on a cold, rainy October morning. And were you born there? Were you from St. Louis?
No, I'm actually from Philadelphia, or the Philadelphia area of Pennsylvania. I was born in Philly.
We've got lots of people on our list we have more people on that list that were on the Blind Like Me list.
Right.
That you're on also?
Yeah.
That from Pennsylvania than anywhere else. I don't know why, but there are more Pennsylvanians on that list for some reason. I can't explain it, and I'm sure you can't either.
No, I have no clue.
No. Anyway, you were born in Philadelphia, and how did you lose your eyesight? Were you born this way?
I was one of those preemies. I was one of those RLS babies. In the 50s, I was born in 52, and I was not that premature, but for some reason I had trouble breathing, and they stuck me in an incubator, and here I am.
And they gave you too much oxygen.
They gave me too much oxygen and did some kind of damage to the retina of the eye. And people have asked me, was I born blind or do I remember seeing anything? And I was kidding around. I love to kid people and mess with people. And I said, oh, yeah, I remember the inside of the incubator. And they believed me. That was the scary part.
Sure they would believe you. Nancy wouldn't lie to them, would she?
No,
of course
not.
But you actually have never seen anything. You've never...
Well, I used to be able to see colors and light. Now... I can tell day from night, but that's about it. I can't tell colors anymore.
Well, yeah, but knowing colors would help a lot, I would think. That's what I don't know, because everybody knows me, and knows I was born like, I've never seen colors. So I think having some concept of colors would, I don't know how it would help, but it seems like it would.
When people talk about green or blue, I remember.
Yeah, what they're talking about, whereas
yeah.
I don't. And, your parents, how did they, I guess that you have siblings, you have brothers and sisters?
No, I'm the only child of my parents. And what I mean when I say that is my mother died in 1975 and my father remarried, and I do have step-sisters and step-sisters and step-brother.
You were a grown woman when your mother died.
Yes,
you were 23 years old. So you weren't raised with it. You were raised as an only child.
Yes.
Did they not have other children because you were blind, do you think?
They said they wanted other kids. It's just, in fact, we took in foster kids when I was a little kid, so I'd have some idea of what it would be like to have brothers and sisters.
I think that's good.
Yeah, it was a good thing. I think I learned a lot. In fact, I learned some practical things from a couple of foster kids that were foster sisters. They taught me the print alphabet.
Really?
Which helped a lot when I went to learn the opticon. Yeah.
Sure, which would, because I couldn't use an opticon because I don't know the print alphabet.
Yeah, well, they would teach it to you if you were going to, but I knew it. I knew the capital letters anyway. And then they gave me these little tiles, the back of which was the small letter and the front. So it was easy to teach myself one from the other.
Sure. Once you learned what one side was, you could learn that. That would be neat. I'd like to have a set of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. TSI had them.
I don't know if you can get them anymore. But my parents, they had my brother, 10 years older than me, and then they waited 7 years, and they had my sister who had perfect sight, and they decided, well, it won't never happen again, so they had another child, and sure enough, here I am.
Oh, but, you have an older brother that's blind.
Well, I had an older brother. He's deceased now, but I had a 10-year-old. My brother was 10 years older than me. And so my parents, like I said, waited 7 years. So I guess that's my watch. And so your formative years, early years, were spent in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia, or Levittown, Pennsylvania, actually was a suburb.
Okay.
But I went to the St. Lucie School for the Blind, which was... not a residential school. It was a day school, but it was a 2-hour-long commute each way to school. So my school day would begin about 6 in the morning and wouldn't end till about 5:30 or 6 that night.
So, but they put all the blind children in this in St. Louis, in St. Greater St. Louis area, in this school?
No, I was not in St. Louis. I was in Philly.
That's right, Philly. I'm sorry. They put all the Philadelphia kids in this one school.
Well, no, a lot of kids went to Overbrook. My parents never wanted me to go away. They never wanted me at a residential school. So they had me. There were of course other blind kids at St. Lucie School. It was a school for the blind, but it was not residential.
Yeah. So, but at least you got to go home every night.
I got to go home every night.
Eat mama's home cooking, and have her wash your clothes, and you were around your parents, which I think is a best of situations if it can be.
Well, I know there's an ongoing discussion about that. For me, yes. Now, I do realize that some people did better at schools for the blind. I don't know. I can't compare, of course. I can't go back.
Because you didn't go to a school for the blind.
I didn't go to a residential school for the blind. I can't say.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have opinions that have now changed since I've met other people. I used to have different opinions about how you could... Well, I won't... I used to have different opinions that have now changed since I've met other people. I'll just...
Well, I'm the same way. I used to have different opinions that I had until I started doing this show.
Okay.
I would have said... before I started doing this thing a year and a half, 2 years ago, I would have said unequivocally that going to public school was by far the best. Now I'm not sure. I'm not positive that's true.
Well, exactly. I just would have said it. Now I guess my opinion is that it's whatever works for each individual person is what works.
Well, we're supposed to keep learning and growing, and obviously we are. Okay, so they started teaching you Braille when you were 5 or 6 years old, little Nancy. Nancy Jo Lynn. Just started going to school and learning new Braille. Are you good at that, Braille?
I'm not a fast Braille reader. I could tell you some funny times when I've misread words that... But I'll say.
Well, tell us one. We're always up for humor here.
Let me think of one that's clean. I have one that's
clean. Huh? What do you mean, one that's clean? What do you? Go ahead. We can handle a little. Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you the one I'm thinking, the funniest one, and you can decide whether you want to stick this in the show or not.
Okay.
I was reading a Braille menu at a restaurant. And let me see, let me put it this way. I was looking at this Braille menu. Fortunately, I was not reading out loud. And I thought they served, I thought they served vagina bam is what I thought they served.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
I told you to clean that up.
Well, we'll clean that up. That's okay.
Shut that out.
Well, you should have. You shouldn't have snapped that it was Virginia baked.
Exactly.
Virginia, but that's poor Braille readers. That's why I never read them. Why I have my wife read them to me, so that I won't make mistakes like that.
Right, exactly.
That's pretty funny.
Of course, now, if I went back and looked at the word again, I realized that I missed. So I can, it's not, I can go back and look and say, oh, that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
So I can figure that maybe that's not what it is. But clues like that make me realize that I need to pay attention to what I'm reading here.
So Braille is not your first medium of choice. I mean, you wouldn't read a book in Braille anymore. You don't do that.
I would if I had to. If I wanted to read the book, And that was the only way it was out. I couldn't get
you'd,
it.
You do it.
I'd rather read on tape. I'd rather listen to something read to me. Like that.
Then read Braille.
Then read
okay.
In Braille, yeah.
But you began in school and they start teaching you math and the normal things they teach you. And there were other blind children there, but still you were around some sighted kids also? There were no sighted kids there.
Actually, they did have us go over to, there was a school across the street, St. Francis de Sales School. And as the older the kids got, the more classes you did over there. So actually, I was around some sighted kids.
Mm-hmm.
At that time at the school, but mainly I went to school because we moved to New Jersey when I was 10. I was going to be 10 that October, and I started in fifth grade in public school.
In public school?
Yeah. I only went to St. Lucie's from kindergarten to the end of fourth grade.
And now in just a regular public school that was much closer to your house or what?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It was like 5-10 minutes away from the house, and it was a public school where I was the only blind kid. And the New Jersey Commission for the Blind had itinerant education counselors.
And so they would come around and talk to you every day or every week?
Once in a while. They had, I forget. Maybe once a week or once a month.
Yeah, because we were getting in then, it was early 60s, and we were getting into mainstreaming blind children. That was
right.
The big deal back then.
Yeah.
So you went to public school, and your folks stayed in Philadelphia or close there?
In South Jersey, Delaware River.
And they stayed there through all your schooling?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And you graduated?
My father still lives there.
Graduated high school from this public school?
From Florence Township High School, yep.
Large school, lots of kids?
Certainly larger than St. Lucie, but it was about 400 kids. Maybe 100 kids in about 100 kids in each class. I don't mean classroom. I mean, you know.
Did you do all right there?
I did fine. In fact, I was I was in the color guards for a football game. I used to help march the banner onto the field.
Really?
Uh-huh. There was a sighted kid at the other end. I just followed her, and we carried the banner, the Florence Township banner, onto the field.
And so she would have one end, and you would have the other. And
yep.
you would know which way she was walking.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So you would just walk along with her.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And you'd assume that she'd kind of watch out and not run you into a post or anything.
She never did.
She
I don't
never,
remember
that's...
bumping into... I mean, we just walked. Just followed her, and we walked ahead of the band and the color guards. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good that they let you do that.
There were a lot of people let me participate all the way through my life. There's been a lot of... people that have allowed me to participate in lots of different things.
And that's the deal, is getting sighted people to understand that you can if they'll let you.
That's
you know?
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of part of the deal. So you were happy in high school? Made some friends?
I made friends. I loved high school. I liked my high school.
Were there other blind kids there in the high school?
Nope. I was the only blind kid in the school.
Only blind. So your parents made a decision at the end of the fourth grade that you needed to go to regular school.
They needed to. What they were told, what doctors told them was that they better either move closer to the school or do something to lessen the 2-hour commute each way. So they thought, because I was very, you would say today, stressed out.
That was driving you crazy, that long
that was
commute.
Driving me. They were saying, they warned them they would have serious problems with me if they didn't. So they said, well, we better move.
We better
do something about it. So they moved to New Jersey, and so I could go to school right in my own hometown.
Well, and for you, it worked out. Worked out quite well, didn't it?
Worked out great for me. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, all right, I'll tell you what. Let's do. Let's take a little short break, then we'll talk about a little more about high school and get you into to college and what you studied and where you, how you did that, what you thought you wanted to be in life. Nancy Lynn is our guest. Back with more of the Blind Like Me show in just a second.
My name's Donna, and for the past 5 years, I've lived up here in the cold country, Rochester, Minnesota. I'd love to move
to a warmer
place. Love
is blind.
But, you know,
the audio magazine for singles.
Anyway, I'm around 32 years old, give or take a couple of years, and never been married. Oh, come close once or twice, but things just didn't work out.
If you'd like more information about this exciting new magazine, phone toll free 1-877-222-0679. That's 1-877-222-0679. Or you can receive the same information as an email. Our address is loveisblind, all one word, at blindlikeme.com. That's loveisblind at blindlikeme.com. Blind Sites. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sites, here's Tim Cummings.
Over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of improvements in synthetic speech. Well, one of the neat sites that I found is called Sepstral.com, www.sepstral.com, and they have some downloadable software speech synthesizers that you can buy that are very human sounding, and they've got all different types. They've got about three or four American English synthesizers with male and female voices. They've got Spanish, German, French, and some of them are quite good. You can purchase one of these synthesizers for $30 and use it on your system to read if you want to read books on your computer or whatever you want to do, or use it for your everyday speech synthesizer needs. I would give the website a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9.
For Blind Sites, I'm Frank, one of the Capstral voices, saying, keep on websiting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sites.
I see your heart too is an open book.
Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Pond, back with Nancy Lynn. He lives in St. Louis, Missouri, and more of our little show called Blind Like Me. And we've gotten you in high school. You participated in the Color Guard. Is that what they called it?
Right. And I was also in the chorus of the high school musical productions. I didn't ever have the solo part. I didn't have any. I kind of would hide in the background, but I was there. And I participated and went to rehearsals and did learn what I needed to learn.
Learned the choir parts by heart?
I learned.
By memory, I mean, by ear.
By memory, and pretty much learned mostly by listening to everybody else keep singing it until I learned it, yeah.
Till you had it down in your head and you knew when it was time for the choir to stand up, you could tell what they were doing by the people around you.
By people around me, yeah. I just listened to what they were doing. If I needed it, somebody would give me a nudge.
Yeah, if you didn't exactly know if they were marching or moving or walking or doing something, somebody, you could put your hand on someone's shoulder. And did you play an instrument in band or not?
No.
You didn't do that?
No.
And they had a football team, and I guess you weren't a cheerleader. I don't know of any blind cheerleaders.
No, I actually wanted to be, but that's something nobody thought I could do. And I was like, okay, they did find me a place to participate, so that was good.
So yeah, that was good. And you did high school, and what did you think in your high school years? What did you think you might want to do the rest of your life?
I wanted to work with people. I wanted to do something to do with psychology or sociology. I ended up, I majored in sociology in college.
Yeah. Just let me ask you one question. Did you date any in high school?
Not any of the guys that were there. I did go to my junior and senior proms. My junior prom, we got a friend of the family to take me to the prom, a friend my own age. My senior prom, I actually had a sort of a boyfriend that I met at camp. I did, at the summertime, went to Camp Marcella. which is a camp done by the commission for the for blind kids. And I met a guy there from Camden, New Jersey. And so senior year, he took me to my senior prom.
And he was also blind.
He was blind, but he went with me, and we went with my we went with his sister and her boyfriend. So we kind of double dated to my senior prom.
Was he was not in your school. He was older. He was...
He was in Camden, somewhere in Camden, New Jersey. I guess he went to Camden High or something.
And so you double dated with them, and they took you in, and they drove you there and brought you home and and all that kind of thing. Well, at least you got to go to your...
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it was really... My mother didn't... My mother really made sure I didn't miss much as a kid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that's the way to, you know, if you... I went to school with so many kids that were babied so much, and that doesn't work. You need to let your blind child ramble and roam and do whatever. They're going to get hurt, but so are sighted kids. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
All right, high school over. You wanted to get into psychology, so what did you do? You took the summer off and started college that fall, or what?
I started college that fall at Lycoming College in Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
About 1970, 71?
1970, yeah. Yep.
Didn't have any computers then.
Nope. No Braille and speaks or Braille lights or any of that.
None of that stuff. So you were going to have to do your textbooks in Braille or have a reader.
I had, recording for the blind. I used recording for the blind's textbooks on tape. They weren't even on cassette at that time. They were on open reels.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
That was not fun. But a lot of times I just use readers. I was never good with the open reel tape. I'd always have trouble getting it on or off or whatever. So cassettes were a great invention when I...
Cassettes were a great invention, period.
Yes,
For all of us, really.
So much easier to
handle. Oh, yeah, so much easier for blind people, especially just put them in
and let it roll.
All right, so you started college. This was at a little community college of two years?
Lycoming College is a four-year liberal arts school in the mountains of Pennsylvania. I think now they're called Lycoming University.
Uh-huh.
But at the time, they were still just Lycoming people.
All right, and this was the end of Vietnam. Richard Nixon was president, and you wanted to be a psychology. You were a psychology major, sociology?
Well, I started out with psychology, ended up majoring in sociology instead. I wanted to be a social worker, but I didn't know that for one thing, Lycoming didn't have that as a degree, number one, and number two, I didn't really know that there was a separate degree in sociology and social work. I didn't realize they were two separate degrees. So I took sociology, and I took a lot of interesting courses.
Like what?
Deviant behavior. I studied various deviant behavior.
Yeah, I would think that would be
abnormal psychology, which was the psychology side of it.
I would think those would be interesting to me. I'd like to take those. To try to kind of figure out how the human mind works.
Right, yeah.
And maybe how your mind works.
Exactly.
It's maybe how you're... That's what I was going to say. A lot of people that go into psychology do it to try to kind of figure out why they're thinking, to maybe not straighten themselves out, but to kind of figure themselves out.
Right. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And so you did a four-year degree. How long did it take you 4 years to do it? Or you do it in 4 years?
4 years to do it. I graduated in May of 1974.
As a psychology or sociology major?
Sociology.
Sociology major. Which means you can do what? Which means you can...
Well, which means I can pretty much say, hey, you want fries with that?
Except
I don't know what this sociology degree actually qualifies me to do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's, of course, there was no place to say you want fries with that back then, was there?
That's true. I couldn't even get one of those jobs.
You know, we owned, when I first met my wife, they owned a little restaurant here in town, a little burger place here in town. We lost it, or we didn't lose it. We sold it in about 92 or 3. But I always thought I would like to go down there and cook the dinner rice, the lunch rice, cook hamburgers, because it was a huge grill. I think I could have done it just to see if I could. But I never, it's something I always thought it would be there, and sure enough, they sold it in 93, and I don't have that chance anymore. But I believe I could have done that. Not that that would be a job you'd want to encourage blind people to take, but anyway, so you got out of college, and it was time now to find a job, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, that summer, I did two things to get ready to find a job. I went to Leader and got my first dog.
Okay.
Her name was Dinah, and she was a black Labrador Retriever. And I had her for 10 years.
You've been using a cane up until then, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So
then I also went out to TSI out in California to get trained with the Opticon.
Okay.
And so I figured those two things would have me ready for employment, maybe a little more ready than maybe the average person would be. I thought the Opticon would give me access to print. Well, it did give me access to something.
Sure it did. Somewhat.
Yeah. And so we did that. And then in August, I was ready for employment. However, I never found employment very readily, but I was ready.
At least you could have worked somewhere. Of course, the Opticon, when you think about it, was a major breakthrough at that time. Was a wonderful, as primitive as they seem to me now, they were a major breakthrough then to allow blind people to read the print page.
Yeah.
I talked to a lady the other day, a lady named Mary Emerson, the other day, who still reads her computer screen with an Opticon.
Oh.
And that's her choice. She's got three or four of them.
Oh, wow.
And she reads, she does the computer screen. So it looks like that'd be difficult to me, but she likes it, and that's what she does. Anyway, you learned the Opticon, you had a dog, you were ready to go to work, and you started applying for what sorts of jobs?
Well, all kinds of different things. One of the things I applied to do, I sent applications or resumes or whatever to colleges. I wanted to stay in the college life for a while, so I wanted to work in the admissions office at a college.
Okay.
But they, that never panned out.
They said
one of the things I did about a year or so after, the state of New Jersey thought I might want to work in a vending stand. So for a whole month, I worked at this guy's vending stand in Trenton. Worked in a cafe, basically just worked in the cafeteria. You know, he taught me a bunch of stuff about how cafeteria works.
Uh-huh.
So I worked in a vending stand for a
while. But you didn't exactly need a degree in sociology to do that now, did you?
It really, after a while, I wasn't worried about whether I used my degree or I did just want to, at that time, I just wanted a job.
So, doing anything? A job?
Anything that would pay me money, basically.
Because you wanted to be independent.
I wanted to be independent. I wanted to be able to move away from home, et cetera.
Because at this time you were still living at home.
I was still living at home in New Jersey, with my parents.
So you cast about looking for a job. The Commission for the Blind said, well, come and be a vending stand operator. You didn't like that.
I didn't really like working in a cafeteria. And I don't think I learned a lot about running a business, really. I think he just got a glorified cafeteria worker out of me for a month. But
yeah,
it was good, and it was something to do for a month.
And they probably paid him to train you.
Exactly.
And so he got the money, and he got the work, so he got it. They paid me one time to teach a boy how to be a disc jockey at a radio station I was working. They paid me a salary or paid me so much money to do that, and then the radio station ended up paying him. I just taught him the board and put him on the air like he would any other kid.
Okay.
We got a little extra money for doing that. Anyway, so you did that a while, but you didn't care for that, right? Obviously.
No. And then I did that in October, and November was when my mother died. She was real. My mother was one that was real into the vending thing. She wanted it. She kind of wanted it. She wanted it to work with me with it, and it would be my stand. But she'd help me with the books and even the cooking and. So she was the one that was real into it, but then she died, and I wasn't real into it myself.
Uh-huh.
So, and then I just kept looking for jobs, and I still lived with my father until early 1978, when I moved to Jacksonville, Florida.
Just on your own, or what?
I knew this. I had gone to a couple. Meantime, all along this time, I had gone to a couple of NFB conventions.
Uh-huh.
And I met this lady in New Orleans who said, she invited me down to visit and like that. And she said that if I were able to move to Jacksonville, she'd help me find work.
Okay.
So I said, well, okay, let's go. I'll, I want to. I'll do this.
Was a blind lady?
No, she was sighted.
Oh, she's sighted.
She could draw, so she could help me. She could drive me around to interviews. She could really help.
She could actually help.
Yeah.
All right, Jacksonville, Florida.
So
okay.
I said, all right, I'll move to Jacksonville, Florida then. And we got me an apartment that my, by that time I had gotten my Social Security disability.
Mm-hmm.
We managed to make it work so that I could do this.
And this was
and my
father
helped me some with money.
Okay.
Like that. And so I was able to do that. And finally, even in Florida, I didn't get very far. But finally in 79, now in the summer of 79, I got a part-time job working at a place called Independent Living. What was it called? ILAB. Independent Living for Adult Blind.
Uh-huh.
That's what it was. And I was the junior. Now get this. I was a junior clerk. Now there was no senior clerk. So I would, but I was. They still called me the junior clerk. It was a part-time job from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m.
Okay. What did you do?
Typing and answering the phones and like that. Typing progress reports on various clients. And answering the phones. That's basically what I did.
Now, they would, these progress reports would come on some sort of dictaphone or something?
They were on dictaphone or on, sometimes they just use a tape recorder. And I just stop mm-hmm. and type and stop, and, you know.
Now, what were they trying to do for adult blind people?
They were a community-based rehab agency. They were teaching them daily living skills. There was somebody teaching them mobility, somebody teaching them Braille. There was another blind guy that worked as a Braille teacher. Teaching them different, yeah, basically.
This was blind people who had maybe lost their eyes later in life,
yeah,
or
they were mostly older, blind. So you know, they taught them as best they could. You know,
sure.
Yeah.
All right. So, but they hired you as a clerk there,
clerk,
to attend
yeah,
to. I guess they were probably nonprofit, depending on grant money or something.
Yeah, exactly. And they were part of the Florida Junior College.
But at least it was a job.
It was a job.
And it was something you could do fairly well. Of course, you were typing on a typewriter. You didn't know whether you were typing or not. You just assumed the thing was working.
Yeah. I can't remember whether that ever happened to me that I typed a whole thing that didn't. But I'm sure it could have happened.
I've talked to people who've done that.
Yeah, I've certainly heard stories like that, but I don't think that ever happened to me.
Typed assignments and then realized that the typewriter wasn't functioning. So you worked that a while. Drawing your disability. That wasn't a bad life, was it?
No, it was okay. It was pretty good actually. And then, but then they ended the job. They actually changed the whole job around, I don't know, in September of 79. I guess I started working there in August of 78. Okay, because
yeah.
It ended in September of 79.
Okay.
Right. And then I wasn't unemployed for a while. And in 1980, I moved to Detroit for a little while. I only moved there. I lived there for like 6 months.
Uh-huh.
And
why in the world would you move to Detroit?
Well, because I didn't really know anybody in Jacksonville, Florida. I knew people in Detroit, and so
you thought you'd go try Detroit.
I thought I'd go try Detroit.
Still casting about, trying to figure out where to go and what to do.
Yeah. So then I moved, but that didn't work out quite. It was too cold, I guess. It was freezing up there.
It'd be horrible.
It was, yeah. So I went home. I went back and lived with my father and stepmother
uh-huh.
in the December of 1980 until September of 82. And then in September of 82 is when I moved into Philadelphia in Park Towers, which is a building, a subsidized building
uh-huh.
Well, basically for blind, disabled, elderly, anybody.
Okay.
In Philadelphia.
But you were still a young lady. You were just 30.
That's right. I moved in September, and I was just turned 30 in October.
Yeah, you still had lots of good years. You didn't need to be around all those old people, did
no.
you?
No. Well, but I found other... I joined Toastmasters not right away, but I joined Toastmasters,
uh-huh.
and I did... I don't know if you remember this back in the 70s. It was the tail end of it, but I did the old S training.
No, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
Remember S, EST, the I think they called it Earhart Seminar Training. It was a big thing back in the 70s. A lot of celebrities did it, and I had heard about it, and I had not. It's kind of like about discovering what's possible for yourself.
Okay.
Kind of like you could call it self-help, I guess, or self-improvement, I suppose.
Like Dale Carnegie course?
Well, a lot deeper than that, because it really does take you, I'd say it goes a lot deeper than, has you look a lot deeper into yourself than something like Dale Carnegie. This is,
okay.
It was, first of all, very long, very long days, and for 2 weekends and an evening is what it was.
And you learned to do this, or you took this course?
I took this course.
Okay.
And then I stayed participating. They have a lot of things that graduates could do, like seminars. And I did, this is where I did that, I told you I did a thing that involved a three-part ropes course. They offered a thing called the sixth day. It was called that because they couldn't think of another name for it, and it took 6 days to do it.
Okay.
So they called it the sixth day. And on one of the days, you did a ropes course. You did what they called the Tyrolean Traverse. They had a rope. I don't know how it was all set up. I don't know all of the background as to how it was set up, but it was a rope stretched across this canyon, and you were harnessed to it, and you had to pull yourself along, like you were hanging from it, basically, and you pulled yourself along the bottom of it from one end to the other.
Well, for what purpose?
Why would you do all this? Because it's basically about confronting your fears. I mean, it was pretty scary to do that stuff. But it was about confront. That whole day was about confronting.
Was it really over a canyon, across a canyon?
Yeah, I'm not sure how. Yeah. I mean, I don't think, let me put it this way. I'm not sure I would have wanted to fall off of it. That's
was there a safety net?
Oh, yeah. There was plenty of safety features taken. You were belted in and hooked. You were hooked on and belted in and whatever. I mean, they did all kinds of safety. They made sure you were totally safe.
And you pulled yourself with your hands
You were laying like face up, and you were pulling yourself along. The rope was like above your head, above your face, like, and you would pull yourself hand over hand across this canyon. How deep it was, I'm not sure, but it was. And then you got to the other side. That was just one part of it. The worst part of it for me, that wasn't even all that bad. The worst of it was the rappelling. I had to rappel down the side of a mountain. That was very scary.
Now, how did you do that?
Very carefully.
Sure, very carefully. But with you did it with ski poles or with...
Well, no. You were on the rope. I'm trying to picture how I did. You were sitting on this with this rope kind of like under you. And you had to, you used your feet to walk your feet down the side of this mountain. And of course you were, again, harnessed in everywhere you needed to be harnessed in and on and all
and
that.
And people were watching you do this.
Oh, yes. There were many people around. A lot of assistants, a lot of other participants. And again, in this six-day group, I was the only blind person that did this.
Boy, and they thought I was weird for getting high back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, I did that too, but we won't go.
That's the nutsiest stuff I've ever heard, going across the canyon on your, laying in this deal. I mean, to what end? To confronting your fears?
I mean, the idea of all of this is to confront, if you can confront your fear of this, whatever this would be, this part, then you can deal with your other fears of, let's say, public speaking or...
Okay.
It's about confronting your fear in life and about doing those things that you're most afraid to do, if nothing else, to show yourself and everyone else that you can be afraid of something, even literally terrified of something, and do it.
Well, there were many nights when me and Jack Daniels confronted my fears. I still may have a night or two fear confronting, if you know what I mean.
That's
the wildest thing. I've never heard of anything like that. I totally missed this.
Oh, yeah.
Any of this.
they don't offer it anymore. They don't.
Understand why.
Actually, from what I understand, the safety record, they have a better safety record than NASA. I understand one person, all the time that they did this program, died of anything, and that person did not get hurt on the ropes course. They probably had a heart attack before it even started. No, they had a better safety record than NASA. I mean, how many people have NASA lost?
All right, we have you to about age 30, so we have 20 years unaccounted for and 20 minutes to do it in.
Okay.
No, we don't have we don't have 20 minutes. So let's take a little short break and come back and finish up your life, the story of the life of Nancy Lynn, the St. Louis, Missouri, in just a minute. More Blind Like Me. Hang on.
My name's Donna, and for the past 5 years, I've lived up here in the cold country, Rochester, Minnesota. I'd love to move
love
to a warmer place.
Love is blind.
But, you know,
the audio magazine
you know
for singles.
To find. Anyway, I'm around 32 years old, give or take a couple of years, and never been married. Oh, come close once or twice, but things just didn't work out.
If you'd like more information about this exciting new magazine, phone toll-free 1-877-222-0679. That's 1-877-222-0679. Or you can receive the same information as an email. Our address is loveisblind, all one word, at blindlikeme.com. That's loveisblind at blindlikeme.com. With part three, Blind Like Me, Nancy Lynn is our guest. She now lives in St. Louis, Missouri, but we have her in Detroit, and then you ended up back at home with your stepfather, your father and your stepmother back in Philly?
In New Jersey.
In New Jersey.
Right. But
okay.
Then I moved to, okay, but we're back a little ways. I went to Philadelphia. I lived in Philadelphia when I did all
at
that.
This, at this place that was a home, not a home, but a subsidized building.
Yeah.
It had blind people and some physically handicapped people, and it was subsidized by the state, I suppose, or the federal government.
Federal government, yeah.
And they had apartments there, separate apartments or just
a
room.
Separate apartments, oh, yeah.
And so you lived there, and you went and took this weird course, which, if you missed the last part of the show, rewind, you'll want to hear about. And did you think this helped you any? What did you think this
Absolutely.
Did for you?
Absolutely. It had me confront all kinds of fears at the time. I mean, for one thing, I've always been leery of, I've never been a real great mobility traveler, but I figured if I could rappel off a mountain, I could certainly cross Broad Street in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like that, you know. It's just, I still participate now. They don't have courses like that now, but I still participate in the company that has evolved. I guess you could call it, they've evolved into a company called Landmark Education.
What do they do now?
Well, they still have courses. They have something called the Landmark Forum, and they actually what they have is this thing called the Curriculum for Living, and it consists of the Forum, something called the Advanced Course, and something called the Self-Expression and Leadership Program. And that's like a three-month program where people they kind of work with you on creating possibilities that you do not now see for yourself, but that you certainly would like to have happen.
Okay.
Then they have you take that possibility and create a project out of it, a three-month-long project.
Okay, before we get too far, this is very esoteric. This is give me an example. Can you give me an example of what you're saying? Create a possibility for yourself. So
create
you want to be a what?
Okay, like creating the possibility of finding and keeping the man of my dreams.
Okay.
I keep generating this possibility. Okay. Now, it's not happened yet. And I'm still saying, I'm still standing for that this shall be.
Okay.
This shall happen. And I'm in seminars, and I have done a lot of work on myself to get things either out of the way so that this can happen. And like that.
Get things...
Like, let's see. What's a, okay, I'll get a thought patterns. For example, it could be a good way to describe what I mean. Like, it's an example of a thought pattern. Like, okay, here you go. This is what a lot of people do.
Okay.
I really do want to find the man of my dreams. I just don't want to give up control of my life. Now,
mm-hmm.
So we don't, that's a thought pattern that oftentimes we don't even realize we have. We just, it's just there in the background running the show. So, like, I don't want to, the thought of, I don't want to give up control of my life or give up control of various aspects of my life, that's going to get in the way of having somebody show up that I could be willing to have in my life.
In other words, you're trying to get all the excess baggage out of the
exactly.
way. So when,
that's
so when,
that's it. That's
when
it.
The
that's
man
it.
Of your dreams comes along,
I'm
you
ready.
Will actually be ready for him.
Yes.
You know, I was.
In fact, it's even better than that. He can't even show up until, because I won't even see him if he does. I won't
yeah.
even see him until I'm ready for him.
I guess my problem is I was never looking for Miss Right. I was looking for Miss Right Now.
There you go. Well, I'm, at this point in life, I'll settle for Mr. Right Now.
So to hell with all this esoteric stuff. Just, you know, it's time for Mr. Right Now. Well,
Mr. Right Now.
You sound like a good candidate for our, you know, we're starting this new magazine called Love is Blind. Did you know about that?
Yeah, I do know about that. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
You
may actually have to. Everybody's waiting for the first one to come out. I think so. Before they actually commit, we're going to do the first one. This is being recorded on the 4th of February, so we're going to put the first one together about a week from today, as a matter of fact. And let's see. This won't run until this weekend, so that would still give you time. Anyway, so what have you done for the last 20 years? What else have you done?
One of the things. Okay, I worked for. Let's see, 20 years. I don't know. It just kind of hung out a lot of times. But one of the things for four and a half years, I worked for AT&T as a hearing impaired relay operator. Or actually, I guess that's a kind of a misnomer. I'm not the one that was hearing impaired. They were. The callers were.
Uh-huh.
I was the person that was, if a hearing impaired person needed to call someone who could hear,
okay.
they would dial our number, type to us what they wanted to say. Or they first of all, they tell us what, they type the directions to us, dial this number.
Yeah. Okay, and this was computer based. You'd read this with a computer.
There was a computer, and I had an ALVA braille display.
Okay.
Hooked to my computer, and I would, I'd read what they wanted to say to me, or then I'd dial it out, get the person on the phone, then read what the deaf person typed, and type back to that person what the hearing person said.
Hold it. You would receive what the deaf person wanted you to do, dial the number, and you would type to the other person or just talk to them?
I'd talk to the person who could hear and speak,
uh-huh.
and take their words and type their words to the person who was deaf or hearing impaired.
I got you.
Okay.
I got
what
you.
I would do, and then back and forth. I would be the bridge. I was the bridge between the two of them.
All right.
And so I did that for 4 years, and I keep wanting to say four. I can't say I loved the job. I didn't really love it, but so I actually figured it out. I did it for 4 years, 6 months, 2 weeks, and 5 days.
But it was a job.
It was a job, and it paid the best of any job I've ever had.
And you worked in nice, clean conditions around nice people and...
Around nice people, around some nice people.
Okay.
And nice, clean conditions and like that.
And was it an 8-to-5 job? Or?
No, it was. That's one of the things I didn't like about it. It was a 24/7. You could work. They could schedule you to work at any time of the day or night. Now, it was not, you were not on call, but your schedule, you get your schedule usually a week in advance, and then that's how... You didn't know how you were working beyond that week, beyond the next week or two.
So you couldn't really make any plans.
No. No. So, in effect, they kind of owned your life.
I don't know why companies do that, because you can't do anything until you find out what your schedule for next week is.
No, I don't know. I really, that's one of the things I definitely didn't like about that job was, you know, and in fact, I remember one, I think it was October of 95. I started in July of 95. But I guess it was the October, I had to work the one night that they changed from daylight saving to standard time.
Uh-huh.
And I had to work the extra hour.
Okay.
Of course, they paid us for that extra hour, so that was okay.
Sure.
But I was really tired by the time that I worked from 7:30 p.m. that night till what should have been 4 o'clock the next morning. I guess it was 4 o'clock, yeah.
But it was actually became 2 o'clock. And
it
you
2
had
o'clock, 3 o'clock,
two,
whatever.
2 o'clock.
Anyway, I had to work the extra hour.
Did you get that? I guess that would have been a Saturday night.
That was a Saturday night into Sunday morning, yeah.
And so Saturday night, I guess you'd get a lot of calls, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, you would. And sometimes you get people who were too drunk to type anything close to correctly. Oh, yeah, you got a lot of goofy things. But about 2 or 3 in the morning, it kind of would settle down, and you didn't get very many calls.
Now, you went to an office and did this?
You went to the office. In fact, I moved, at this point, I moved out of the subsidized housing.
Uh-huh.
Into an apartment that was actually right down the street from where I worked.
So you could walk to work?
I could walk to and from work, yeah. That was really nice.
But it would be kind of a stressful job because you'd have to really keep up. I mean,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of. In fact, I remember when I walked home, even just the short walk home, it relaxed me just to walk that little bit of that stress off.
But they had the computer set up and the Braille display and all that. Were you the only blind person there doing this? Or
no, there were a bunch of others of us.
Really?
Yeah. And that's in fact, that's how I found out about the job. One of the people, the placement specialist at the Pennsylvania, I don't know what they call it in Pennsylvania anymore, their agency that served the blind, she told me about the job. And in fact, I had heard about it 3 years before, in 92. But they wanted to hire me at that time. But I didn't want it because I didn't want to give up my whole life. I didn't like the idea that I had to be so totally flexible. Because at that time, I was participating a lot in that Landmark Education Company, where I was doing a lot of volunteer work, which I found much more fulfilling than the actual job.
Than actually having to go to work
even though AT&T paid me money.
Okay, so you did this for about 4 years, so that takes us to almost 2000, doesn't it?
Yeah. It takes us to February of 2000, when
you quit the job.
Well, we didn't quit. I didn't quit. We were downsized. A bunch of us were downsized. One of the contracts, the relay service is done by state contracts, and they lost the contract for Illinois. And when they lost the Illinois contract, they knew they didn't need a bunch of us. So the day Illinois went away, so did we.
And this was you. This is how you got to St. Louis, or what?
Well, indirectly, I knew that I had to leave. At some point, I knew I was going to have to leave the apartment that I had because I couldn't afford to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved. Well, I moved to Michigan, but again, that didn't work out. It seems like my time in Detroit never quite works out.
Yeah, you've been there twice now.
Twice, yeah. I tried that. I won't be going back there.
Won't do that anymore. Yeah.
But then I moved from there to Arkansas, and I did stay in Little Rock, Arkansas, for about a year and a half.
What'd you do there?
Not much. That's why I left there. I wasn't really doing a whole lot. I did go to LWSB for a couple of days, evaluate my employment skills, and they were supposed to do this for a week, but I actually got sick and couldn't.
You didn't like them, and so you didn't go back.
I actually got a cold.
You actually got sick. I did get sick.
I got a cold.
Right, what do you do now? Are you unemployed?
I'm unemployed.
You're unemployed
now. But I do participate in my landmark courses, my seminars.
So you're still working with these landmark people who do these weird things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't do the weird things anymore.
They don't.
No, they don't. They just do these normal, perfectly normal courses.
Like preparing you for Mr. Right.
They're preparing me for Mr. Right.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck. I hope he comes along. It's time for him to show up, though, isn't it?
It is time.
It is getting close to time for him to come around. Maybe
yeah.
Maybe this will be the impetus that will send Mr. Wright to your door.
Oh, that would be great.
Wouldn't that be great?
Wonderful.
All right. Well, we're going to go and enjoyed visiting with you, and we'll run this in a couple of weeks, and I'll let you know. I'll let you know, Nancy, when it runs. What's temperature in St. Louis?
It's maybe in the 40s by now.
That's about what it is in Lufkin, Texas.
Yeah, where's Lufkin?
Lufkin is 120 miles north of Houston.
Okay.
So we're in the Bible Belt of deep East Texas. Nancy, thank you much.
Okay.
Did you go? Well, Nancy Lynn from St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis is a kind of different kind of town. St. Louis has a lot of cold weather in the winter and very hot weather in the summer. It gets hot in Missouri in the summer, and if you live there, you know that, I suppose. Anyway, Nancy Lynn from St. Louis, Missouri. You know, when you talk to, and we've talked to lots of folks here. This is number 69 or so of these things that we've done. You begin to think that maybe a college education for an intelligent blind person may not be the best thing. I don't know. We can debate that endlessly, just like we can blind schools or public schools or whatever. Anyway, thanks for listening. Don't forget our magazine, Love is Blind. We have not done the first issue, and we have not because of Tom's illness, because of our friend Tom Houston, who is in the hospital at this point in time and is not able to help me with this magazine, and it's something I can't do by myself. We do intend to publish a magazine, probably going to be in the middle of March before we do. But anyway, thanks to you folks who've subscribed, and we'll get you a magazine as soon as we're able. All right? And thanks for listening to Blind Like Me. If you'd like to be a guest, you can email me at blindlikeme@, txucom.net, blindlikeme@txucom.net, or at my email address, philparr@txucom.net. Either one will get you in touch with me. You can call me, 936-634-9500. Thank you much. We'll see you next week. More Blind Like Me.